Hi there, you're listening to Coaches on a Mission, the show designed for values-driven coaches who want strategies to find more clients, become more visible, and scale wisely without compromising yourself. So I'm your host, Dallas Travers. Thank you for being here. Today, we're going to talk about scholarships. So before I introduce our guest, I want to draw a crystal clear distinction between discounts and scholarships. So actually, a while back inside the Hive, we had a member share a story that someone requested a scholarship into her program. She was in the middle of a launch and really wanted more people in the program. So this person was asking for a scholarship and the coach made it work. But when we really talked through what happened, it felt important to me to let this coach know that what unfolded was not a scholarship. The coach just gave a discount. That's not equitable or sustainable. Now, there is nothing wrong with offering discounts, but I think it's really important for us as values-driven coaches to avoid confusing discounts with scholarships. Scholarships, they are something that are awarded on the basis of merit, achievement, or other qualifications. Sometimes it's need. Right? Scholarships require structure, they require clear criteria, and an equitable process to evaluate the winners. Scholarships, they require so much intention. They're also really important, and I want all of us to just be thoughtful about when, why, and to whom we decide to grant scholarships. Okay, so I feel like that sets the stage for today's episode. Dani Abernathy is back, and this time she's ready to begin the process of rolling out an equitable, sustainable scholarship program. All right, so let's be really clear. I am not an expert in diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. I am not an expert in equitable scholarships. I want to acknowledge my own limitations here, but I have given a ton of thought to this idea. And what you're going to hear today is you're just going to hear me coaching Dani and asking some essential getting started questions to help her begin to evaluate the shape of her scholarship program, because right now it feels really important and kind of impossible to get off the ground. All right, so if you have ever made the common mistake of slapping a discount on your offer and calling it a scholarship, or maybe you want to develop an aligned scholarship program in your own business, I hope this episode can help you get started down that path. All right, with that, here's Dani Abernathy. Hi, Dani. Welcome back to the podcast. I think this is your third time on the show. Is that right?
It is.
You are officially the record holder. I love it. I'm so glad to have you back, and also excited for our conversation today. This is something we've never talked about on the show, and I know it's something that's really meaningful for you. So my intention is to help you get some real traction around this. Before, I'm just building up suspense for our listeners, can you tell? Before we get into our conversation about scholarships, can you just fill our listeners in? Like, what context do they need, or what update do they need from you about the shape of and structure of your business?
Sure. So I'm Dani Abernathy. I help people write the stories they need to tell so their readers can feel seen and can see others. I've been in the Hive for about 2.5 years, and about a year ago, I opened a year-long group mentorship program that's basically modeled after the Hive. The structure is very similar to the Hive. During that year, I help people embrace, plan, and write their first draft or revision of their novel. My program is built to support people who have felt othered. And so it's really important to me to support people with marginalized identities and queer people, neurodivergent people, Black, brown, disabled, like all the people. And as part of that, I want to have some sort of scholarship program or some way for people who can't afford it to be in the program. And so I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I've been setting aside some money from my revenue for this, but I haven't started the program because I don't know their parameters or the process, and there's a lot of feelings around it. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to just
narrate that neither of us are inclusion experts, right? We are both striving and marching down the path toward an anti-racist and truly an equitable, accessible business model. But neither of us are experts. We do both know how to coach. So let's coach around this and see how far we can get. Can you tell me first, I want to start with these two questions. Number one, what is your intention behind having a scholarship program?
So I think maybe there's two different ways to answer that. From the client's perspective, I want to help them write their book. I just renamed my newsletter. It's okay. The Quiet Book Revolution now. And so my kind of vision for the work I do and the impact of that work is to have all these quiet books going out that challenge bias and hatred and like help people feel seen and like they're okay, but then also help other people to see others so that we can have less war and genocide and oppression and all those things and more like love and understanding. And so I think the intention is to do that even more and to provide opportunities for people who wouldn't otherwise be able to get support on their books. Yeah, to get support.
Got it. So what I'm understanding is you have a greater mission with your program, right? Which is to amplify togetherness, right? For lack of a better term, help readers feel seen, help marginalized voices be heard. The theory here is by having a scholarship program that makes this work more accessible to the marginalized voices that you want to make sure are heard. Am I tracking all of that?
Yes.
Got it. So a scholarship is really aligned with the mission of your company.
So, I think so.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you might have the answer to this next question could be the same. I'm not trying to trick you here. But what is the goal with the scholarship program?
For the writer or for... Well, that's a great question. I mean, so I don't exactly know which approach to take to answer this question. But one of my questions is... Does the writer need to intend to publish? Like, do they need to be writing about some sort of marginalized identity or not? And I mean, I think ultimately the goal is to help people who are underrepresented in publishing have the skills and the confidence to tell their stories and get them out into the world in whatever way they choose.
Okay. So one thing that I think has gotten in my way, right? We've talked behind the scenes. I've been thinking about a financial aid program for 3.5 years, and I do not have a financial aid program because it's just easy to get it twisted for me. Mm-hmm. It's just really, I have not quite landed on something that feels completely aligned. And I think what has gotten in my way, tell me how this lands for you, is I can easily confuse fair with equitable, and those are not the same thing. I'll explain that a little bit more, right? Well, is it fair? Like, doesn't everyone need, like, couldn't everyone benefit from having financial aid, right? Mm. Isn't everyone's story worth being told? Who am I to judge who qualifies? This sure doesn't seem fair.
Mm.
But when I look through the lens of equity, and this, I have to shout out Trudy LeBron because she's the person who really helped this click for me. She talked about a scholarship program truly being for the person who is not resourced. And sometimes being resourced, it isn't, oh, I have the money in my bank account, but it could be, I have an uncle who has money in his bank account that I could go and ask to fund this program I want to be in. I have a balance on my credit card that covers that my tuition. Those are other versions of being resourced. So a financial aid program really is targeted toward people who do not even have those resources.
Mm-hmm.
So what I began to understand was, okay, if this is going to be equitable, I have to stop striving to be fair. There has to be some criteria. Otherwise, it just won't be equitable because now it's left to kind of my mood and my own squishiness.
Or who asks first.
Or who asks first, right?
Right.
So part of why it's important, that's why I asked what's the goal, because it was going to lead right into your question around criteria. We have to select criteria and we have to give ourselves the benefit of the doubt, right? That you're being intentional and thoughtful about your criteria. You're not just pulling it out of the sky. Therefore, this criteria is the right criteria to get started.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring this up because I heard you say the mission, right? The intention is to help amplify marginalized voices, help readers feel seen and heard. And then immediately when I started talking about the goal, you had a few questions. Does this person need to have the intention of having their book published? If they don't have the intention of having their book published, that does not serve the company's mission.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So why don't we move into establishing some criteria to get you started? This is by no means the final draft. And I think that might inform a few other answers to questions that you have felt squishy around. Does that sound helpful?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay, great. So holding the vision for the company in mind, let's talk through some criteria. I'm going to nominate that in order to qualify for the scholarship, they have to have the intention to publish their book because that's the whole point of the greater mission.
Yes, I agree. And they don't have to plan to traditionally publish. They can self-publish. I'm fine with that. But I do think getting their book into the world should be their goal.
Great, great. What other pieces of criteria feel important?
Well, they need to come from some community that is underrepresented in publishing. I wrote out a few that come to mind, like BIPOC, disabled, LGBTQIA2S, all the letters and numbers, neurodivergent people, fat people, and there might be some other communities I'm missing, but I think representing one of those, and or maybe I just ask them to identify, you know, how they're underrepresented in publishing.
Yes. Great. Great. So we're also going to be able to craft some application questions here. Okay. What about the financial piece? What is the criteria there? Send me your last 3 years of tax returns. Oh my gosh.
So sort of assessing their eligibility on that is a totally different question. But when I think about who I want to get these scholarships, it is people who cannot afford it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's too broad a way of saying that.
Great. So how do you determine? I think an easy question here is, what is their annual household income?
That's so variable depending on where you live and what your family situation is and your bills. And I think actually on your summit thing, what was it called?
What to do instead.
Yes, mm-hmm. What to do instead. Someone mentioned like an equitability assessment sort of thing. So, you know, do you have trouble paying your mortgage? Do you have trouble getting food? Like, so people can kind of maybe group themselves to assess whether they qualify financially?
I hear you. Here's yes, and right. I think you've got to have a baseline of their household income. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have to be a determining factor, but here's why. Let's just say, so maybe it's two parts, right? What is their household income? And give me a snapshot of your financial need. They don't need to present any paperwork or documentation, but they can just give you a narrative description of their need. Mm-hmm. But if someone, gosh, this is so tricky. I just feel like an asshole here, but I'm going to say it. Let's just say someone has a household income of six figures, right? Or even $20,000 a year. That's like the lower end of the spectrum makes it clearer. But if they have a lot of debt, right? That's a different kind of need, right? They're not actually as under-resourced as someone else who hasn't even ever been in the position to accumulate debt.
Right.
So I think that household income, it's also just going to be informative around the messaging of your program and how broad a net the marketing of this program is reaching. Mm-hmm. I would recommend asking what their household income is and a narrative statement around describing their need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely like the idea of giving them the opportunity to sort of explain their situation, you know?
And then what do you think about a question around finding out how else they have invested in getting their book written. Mm. And I'll tell you why. For me, if you have invested, like you've paid money for a lot of other programs and you're feeling like, oh, God, I've paid money for all these programs. Yes, it would be great to have financial aid. Mm-hmm. You're resourced enough to have paid before. So there's got to be some resources there.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. So what other possible questions might you want to ask to just get an accurate picture of their financial need, if any?
You know, there's more specifics that might come up in the sort of what's your situation, like do you have kids you're providing for or health expenses, that sort of thing. But I don't know that those need to be separate questions.
Yes. Agreed.
I wonder if there's a question sort of like a, I don't know, a scale question, like if you were to enroll in the mentorship without the scholarship at, you know, this amount per month, how greatly would that impact your life or like how difficult would that be?
I think that narrative question is going to be the big one, right? And just letting them share with you their perspective around their own need. Okay, I want to bring this back to the mission here. The mission is to amplify marginalized voices, get more of these quiet book revolution stories out in the world. I think, therefore, there might be a criteria around they have to have the ability to show up to the calls, to get support, to do the writing and finish the book. Otherwise, it goes against the mission of the scholarship program.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been telling people, like I just brought some new people in and I told them to try to commit to 2 calls a month and to submit for feedback at least once a month. Those might be reasonable requirements.
How much time do I need to spend writing? I know it's so different, right? But you got to paint that picture too. It could be 10 hours a week actually writing, because that is the time commitment. The calls are maybe the easy part.
Right. Yeah. I think this is a question too, Dallas, because so the mentorship is a year long because I believe writers deserve the gift of writing slow and deep. And I think, you know, they can only be, their book can only be as healthy as you are. And like shit comes up, right? Like life happens. And or, you know, you have a chronic illness or depression or you lose your, I don't know, your stuff happens, right? And so part of the mentorship, part of why I've structured it the way I have is so that people don't feel like they have to hustle and like have this urgency in their book. They can give it time to grow and develop. So one of my questions is like, how do I balance, you know, how do I make sure that the people who get the scholarship are getting value from it and like moving through the program while also not putting this huge burden on them for how they're supposed to show up?
This is such a great question. So I believe it's safe to assume that if someone requires financial aid, there are likely circumstances in their life that are going to require more time and attention from them. So I wonder if it makes sense for the scholarship program to automatically be 2 years long.
Well, that was a question too. Like, do I either make it 2 years long or is there something at the 1 year mark where they apply for a second year or we kind of assess where they are? I do think it will take 2 years for them to really get to like a book that is ready for considering publication.
Yeah. Well, I'm just making math easy for myself. Let's assume that a scholarship recipient has half the time that someone who is resourced enough to not require a scholarship. So then it would take them twice as long. So I wonder if just setting that expectation, because we want people to be successful. So yes, there's this criteria for them to meet. They have to plan to publish. They must represent an underrepresented community. We want to know about their financial need. We want to know specifically what could prevent them from finishing their book, what circumstances outside of themselves could prevent them from consistently moving forward. But I think it's equitable to set the expectation this is likely going to take you longer than someone who is more resourced.
Yeah.
So what if it's 2 years, right? At the 1 year mark, there's definitely a check-in with you. And then this will lead us right to the criteria for the company now, right? Mm. So there's the criteria for them, but what is the criteria for you? And I think there needs to be a process to help them track their own progress. So with our Social Impact Exchange program, which is not a scholarship program, it is a fellowship program, it's an exchange. Every month, our fellows are, as part of the exchange, they are required to answer like a 6-question survey. Mm-hmm. A big part, one of the questions in that survey is, how are you feeling about your, are you on track? It's a scale question, right? How on track are you toward reaching your impact goal by the end of the year? Mm-hmm. And then what do we need to know about what's happening in your life, right? That could take you off track. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's, how do we make this equitable? We understand the circumstances they are in, and the circumstances they are in is that they likely don't have the same amount of time.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yeah. And I would, as I hear myself here, I think that part of the scholarship requirements could be attending a minimum number of calls. So it's not a recommendation. It's they've got to attend 2 calls mm-hmm. a month. They need to get feedback once a quarter. They've got to fill in their survey every month. That is how you are able to communicate and make sure they have the support that they need.
Mm-hmm. Barring special circumstances.
Always.
Because sometimes I'm just thinking of people who are in the program who potentially qualify, and more stuff comes up, right? And
for sure. We have a fellow right now who has paused. She's just needs 90 days to get her feet on the ground. And because we are in open communication about that, we're the ones who suggested it.
Mm, yeah.
So that's what it looks like to provide support.
Okay.
Hi, it's Dallas. So whether you've been a longtime listener of Coaches on a Mission or you're relatively new to the show, what you're hearing here on every episode is really just the tip of the coaching iceberg. The true transformation, it happens inside the hive. So consider this your official invitation to join us. This year-long mentorship program will teach you the ripple effect system so that you can stop worrying about where the heck your next client might come from and start making reliable money as a coach. From there, the sky is truly the limit, my friend. You can apply for a spot inside the hive now at dallastravers.com/hive. Do you feel okay to shift and talk about the criteria for the company now?
Yes.
Okay. It's not just about slapping a discount on your offer, right? And there, now you're doing good work. You have to really think about which type of scholarship recipient you are able to equitably serve. Mm-hmm. And let's just shed like supremacy culture here for a second. Mm-hmm. You're one person. You are not and should not be expected to be able to properly serve everyone. And that is just itchy, right? But it's reality. And I fear that's the thing that could stop you from rolling this meaningful scholarship out is this question on like, how do I know who to let in? And
that's 1,000% what could stop me.
Yeah, totally.
Like a feeling that I need to be able to serve everyone when, like, I may not have the skills, or, you know, the container may not be right for everyone.
Yep. So I'm going to narrate this for our listeners. I think this is really important because I know for me, I could turn that to I'm an asshole, right? Or I'm a hypocrite. I'm not doing this right because this is someone who I can't let this person in because the program can't support them. It is harmful to let someone into your program knowing that the program is not really designed to support them.
Harmful to them and harmful to the group.
Yes, harmful to them and harmful to the group. And it could be an indicator of, oh, here are places I can go to improve my program, but we can't do everything all at once. So all we can do is strive.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for stating this, Dallas.
Yeah. So I feel like this is going to require some contemplation on your part, and I don't want to put you on the spot here on the podcast, but let's design some questions you could ask yourself in order to help you get really clear and grounded in the type of candidate who you actually cannot properly support inside the program.
Yeah.
What might some of those questions be?
This isn't in question form, but there's something around language, like English fluency.
Mm-hmm.
And writing ability. Like, I don't need people to be prize-winning writers, but I need them to have a competency in grammar and potentially fiction writing. Because the program isn't about teaching, you know, grammar and sentence structure and all that kind of stuff. Something that comes up is, because we have group calls, I need people to be able to participate in the group setting in a way that I guess is equitable to everyone. And I also think there's an element of trauma, like how much emotional support might people need?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the boundaries of what I can provide in this program?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are the things that are coming to mind.
Great. Here are three key questions for you to really contemplate. And we are not talking about candidates. We are talking about the infrastructure of your program, right? Your qualifications as a coach. This has nothing to do with the candidates and everything to do with the structure of the program. Okay. Mm-hmm. Question number one, what skills don't we teach but are required in order for a book to meet the mission of being out in the world?
Yeah.
Number two, what level of participation must we encourage, right, in order to support the core values of the program and ensure the mission that the book's going to be finished?
Yeah.
What qualifications do you, Danny, possess that allow you to provide trauma-informed support?
Oh, there's so many things, Dallas. I'm getting a little overwhelmed. This is part of the problem, right? Because I just get overwhelmed when I think about it, because I want to... So when I'm thinking about neurodivergence, for example, is the program set up to support people with ADHD well, or, you know, like different ways of being in the world? Does my program serve them in a way that is going to serve them, that's going to help them?
Yep. You know what came up for me? Because this is something that we are always deepening inside of the work that I do. And it's hard, but the more I give myself permission to do things well and slow, the more things get done.
Mm.
So maybe as you're making this assessment, what we're doing is starting the scholarship program. So this assessment could reveal goals and intentions to improve your curriculum.
Yeah.
And you don't have to wait until the curriculum is improved, right? In order to launch your scholarship program, you can continue to make improvements and then have different answers to these questions that we outlined. And with your different answers, it broadens the scope of eligible candidates.
Mm.
Or I want to frame that differently. It broadens the scope of your ability to serve more people in the scholarship program.
Yeah.
Because it's really about doing right by people.
Right.
And understanding that you can't always do right by everyone. So you bring a lot of intention and therefore provide scholarships to the people you feel most confident about being able to serve, given the shape of the program right now.
Mm.
You're always going to get better.
That's a good way to frame it. The people I feel most confident being able to serve.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't serve everybody.
You can't. Yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have some starter criteria for candidates. Do they plan to publish, or what is their plan for publishing? Talk about the intersectionality of your marginalized identity. You're going to want to know about their story, right?
Yeah.
Describe their financial need. Find out what could prevent them from showing up consistently and finishing their book. We're changing the shape of this program to just give more support because it will likely take a scholarship recipient more time.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about, like, let's get honest about the program's capability to serve, right? Who are you equipped to serve right now? And that's going to help you determine improvements to make over time with the program and who is a candidate for a scholarship now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What else is present for you around this? I've got a big thing that's present for me, but this is your time, not mine.
What's your big thing, Dallas?
Thank you. Okay, so my big thing is, and this was advice I received from an inclusion expert, the scholarship does not have to be free. And one could make a really strong case that the scholarship should actually be no less than the operating costs to deliver the program. I know you mentioned you've been setting money aside. And so I just wanted to let you know, maybe it could be helpful for you to think of this as a financial aid program rather than a scholarship program. And recipients could perhaps fall into three categories in terms of what they are paying to be a part of the program. But there's a lot of value in financial aid over scholarships.
There's value in people having to pay something.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of their investment, emotional investment, and energy investment. How do I determine, so are my operating costs, is that like my expenses for the year?
It is the cost, and you're with a scaled program, good luck landing on a concrete number, okay? Mm-hmm. But when you look at what you pay to deliver the program, how much do you pay to deliver the program to an individual person? So the way we landed on that, we have someone who is the client success manager. 100% of what she does involves delivering the program to people, right? So when the program is at capacity, we divide what her salary, right, by the number of people inside of our program to get pretty darn close to what it actually costs us to deliver the hard cost to deliver the program to an individual person.
I see. So I wouldn't be like necessarily counting my marketing VA and all that kind of stuff. It'd be like Zoom and my course platform and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Zoom, your course platform, your customer service person on your team. You could decide whether or not you want to account for your time. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I'm like, if I'm not spending time on this, I'm spending time on something else in my business. So I'm going to be here anyhow. But that could be a consideration.
Okay. That makes sense. If I were to do that, which I like the idea of that, a financial aid program instead of a scholarship program. If there were tiers, how is that determined?
Mm-hmm. Well, so for me, with our fellowship program, I want 15% of our membership to be fellows. So if we enrolled 10 people this month in the Hive, that would open up 1.5 spots in the fellowship. So I'm clear, again, what is our capacity to really serve people well? So how does that number shake out? So understanding we have 15 spots available, then perhaps you have a sliding scale. I don't know. I just feel like that can get squishy, but it could be, I'm making up math really easy for myself. Someone who's paying $25 a month, someone who's paying $50 a month, and someone who's paying $100 a month. And you could look at it and say, for every person who's paying $100 a month, that opens up a spot for a $25 a month person. So it's just kind of assessing, what does the scholarship program look like full? Right. And then how do I balance so that the people who are paying $100 a month are essentially paying a portion of the tuition for the person who's paying $25 a month? So the way it works out is every scholarship recipient is paying the equivalent of $50 a month when you do some arithmetic there. Can we go take a nap? Scott, I'm over it. So a way to think about it is, okay, so our scholarship program, and maybe this is the next tier. Maybe right now it's everyone in the scholarship pays $50 a month. And if someone cannot afford that right now, they're on the wait list for when the program can support people who are able to pay less.
So when you say like person paying $100 versus $25, is the person paying $100 also a scholarship recipient, or is that like the full? Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So let's just say you're, I was just kind of making math easy for myself. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm currently setting aside 10% of my revenue for the scholarships, but I also have a cap on the program, which is 60 people. And so every 10 people that come in, like it's basically one scholarship spot. But if I have a cap of 60 people, then I can't actually bring in six more people. So I'm making this too complicated. I don't think I have a question around this. I think I'm just talking now.
Here's what I'm going to recommend for any listeners who have stayed through this portion of our conversation. Let's get the scholarship program started. And you can decide, okay, my goal is 60 members in the program. That makes X number of revenue. And I can support three scholarship recipients right now who each pay X amount. And just let that be okay. Because once you start receiving applications and having people in the scholarship program, this part of it will become more clear. And I think it could get, well, we've proven it can get convoluted really quickly.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So another question that comes up is like, do I need to, people in the mentorship can schedule one-on-one calls with me.
Mm-hmm.
Should I make part of the program either discounted calls or like that's part of what they get? They get X number of calls with me.
So assuming that a scholarship recipient is going to require more support in order to be successful, I'm adding another question to your assessment here, right? What extra support needs to be built into the scholarship program? You may find that a private with you twice a year is what support do they need in order to truly be successful? And then you got to deliver that support.
Right. Because the goal isn't just for them to check all the boxes of like doing the coursework. It's to come out with a book that works and that tells a story they want to tell and goes out and like impacts people.
Yes, exactly.
Right. Okay. And so in that case, I think I might need to offer some one-on-one calls.
I think for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Which also informs how many people can I offer a scholarship to, right? Mm. And if it's one person, Danny, it's one person right now and you are striving to have the impact you want to make.
Yeah.
And so another thing that Trudy shared with me, and it was so helpful. Actually, it wasn't Trudy. It was Natty Fantastic. She's like, you want your fellowship program to be deep. So more fellows doesn't necessarily mean more impact because it's called a social impact exchange program, right?
Yeah.
So that was very helpful for me to get so clear on if what we want is deep impact, what does that actually need to look like in terms of our service delivery in order to come back to the mission of the program itself?
Yeah, that's a really good thought. And I do personally, you know, I prefer deeper relationships rather than just more relationships. So
yeah.
So I think fewer scholarship recipients with perhaps more, I don't know if care is the right word, but more
intention
time feels better than just bringing in X number of people.
Yeah, because that's just ticking some sort of equity box, right? Like, wow, look at what I've done. We've got 20 people in a scholarship program and we're not able to support them.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So what are your next steps around this?
Well, I'm going to talk to my inclusion coach. And I think I need to think through those, you know, those business side questions and get clear about what skills, you know, I don't have, I do have and don't have, and what the program cannot do.
Yep.
And then I need to figure out an application process.
We have application questions. We did that today a little bit, but here's what I propose. Let's assess who the program can support, right? That feels really clear. You're going to talk to your inclusion coach. Listen back to this recording because we've got four questions already. right? What is their intention to publish? Talk about the community that you represent. Tell me about your financial need. And then why don't you come back to a Hive call and we will craft the application and talk a little bit more about the application process. One thing in particular for us to consider is how will people be notified, right? Mm. And what is the, I'll use the term consolation prize, right? Mm. Thanks for applying. You did not get a scholarship. So where, how are we caring for those people as well? So there's more to talk about here, but I think the next conversation will be most valuable when you've made some progress on what we've talked about today.
Okay, that sounds great.
Great. Any takeaways from our conversation?
I don't have to be perfect and I don't have to serve everyone. And the intention is not to serve as many people as possible. The intention is to help them write good books that do good in the world. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The intention is books that make a difference in the world. And the scholarship program is one path that you take to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thanks for coming back. You're always welcome on this show. So it's really good
to
have you
back again.
Yeah. Actually, it might be interesting for us to continue this conversation and update our listeners. So, all right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next week. I'm Dallas Travers, and this is Coaches on a Mission. I want to thank you so much for tuning into the show. If you don't already follow the show, please do that now by hitting the subscribe or follow button. And if there's a coach in your life who you care about, share this episode with them. I have a feeling they'll thank you for it. So if you enjoyed what you heard and you want to take things further, you can do that really easily. So we've got over 200 episodes here for you to enjoy. Plus, you can access transcripts and curated playlists when you join the Pod Squad. Join us now for free at dallastravers.com/squad. Thanks again for tuning in.